listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 14th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. And before we begin, I want to give a great shout out to Dr. Kelly, whose birthday was yesterday.
It's true.
So, happy birthday, Dr. Kelly, again.
Happy birthday. I think he's got to be up to like 45 or something by now.
At least, yeah.
Well, thank you for mentioning. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. It's so good to see you all again. So glad to be here with you. And thanks to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives as well. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, other educational programs can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief, and those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. 1 planet, 1 race, 1 ancestry, 1 destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Tonight's topic is going to be exploring our dreams.
It is, but I'd like to address something in the chat, if I may first. And, Dr. Wendy was saying that, it's been kind of a tough week at work and stuff. And Dr. Mike is throwing his 2 bits in there, saying he's found that working with the public is a real challenge. The problem is that 85% of people are rude and stupid, and we all know you can fix stupid. I had to chuckle because Michael and I, we're just talking about this before the program. Wendy has just responded with, she agrees, Dr. Mike, but for every 50 rude people, I will find one who makes me smile. Yeah. And that's true. That's true. I just put in a couple of days at the hospital, and there are times when I say, give me COVID any day for the way people are acting these days. But there are some really nice people. It's just if you have a day that's a lot of not nice people. So I've changed it to where the first point of contact in the hospital to the first line of defense.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a war zone sometimes. And I don't know. I think it's the radiation. I really do. But it's, and speaking of which, I'm going to segue with that because there's a lot of things in the air these days that never used to be. And my old teacher, Magda, would say that, dreams are either hopes, fears, or prophecy. And I believe that for a very long time, until somewhere in the 90s, early 2000s, and the energy of the world seemed to shift. And dreams started to change. And I know I had one last night that was a real doozy. I was on some other dimension. All these people I knew in some other reality. So I do think that there's something to be said for the way the energy has changed. Now, if I'm really pragmatic about it, I could say that we are so influenced in our unconscious, subconscious with media, the internet, the list is long, that it alters our psyches. I could say that. But I also think there's something else going on, and alternate dimensions of time-space, perhaps. Are we somehow altering our consciousness to expand and explore, Michael? You know, I think that anything is open for debate here.
Yeah, this is true. We were talking about this a little bit ago too, and I'm a kind of the personal opinion where I think people have, to varying degrees, always been crazy and messed up. I think it's just a perspective thing that we think it's getting worse than it historically has been. But that being said, I think that we exist in a world of shifting energies and constant change. And I think that what you said otherwise is absolutely correct in the sense that, there is an energy shift. Is that because of something in the air and something, radiation? Is it because of cultural changes, all the different things, the emotional energy that might go into a somehow linked consciousness of humanity, of life? I don't know.
Well, I think that I remember speaking with my old teacher, Frank, long before he passed, about how I thought so much of our psychology and what we were basing our thinking on was so Freudian. And I said, I think Freud is outdated now. And he said, that's a possibility. Freud, and let's be clear, Freud was the first one to buck the church. He was the first one to buck the system in its thinking that everything was kind of religious-based and had to, kind of fall into the mold of, religion. And he bucked that system. He said, no, I don't think so. Of course, he was ridiculed and persecuted for many years until it started to catch on. Mm-hmm. Now we have to consider that it was his nephew, Edwards, I believe, something, who started the first campaign marketing, trying to, in the U.S., of marketing products and tapping into the consciousness and how he could sell things. And so he really launched that whole genre of affecting the psyche. Yeah. But, Freud was all about the id, the ego, the superego, and so much of it was very sexual. He thought a lot of things were the Oedipus complex and so on. So, if you ever read Freud, you understand he really delved into that, which a lot of that may or may not be true. And I think that we have, while some of it may still have some bearing, if that's how you look at it, I think we've moved past the Freudian kind of perception of things, and I think we have to open our scope. But no one is really doing that yet. There's a lot of psychologists trying to fix some of the damage over the last couple of decades, of like passive parenting and so on. But, what's the consensus of, where we are in our psychology. And I think that that's really up for debate. I know I say that a lot, but we don't know. As a metaphysician, we kind of extend ourselves a little bit further into the spiritual elements, that we think that there are other factors, that, we study more and better, greater. I say better, but that's because I'm a snob. I think that it's if we have to understand that there are varying layers of consciousness, not mm-hmm. just the subconscious and unconscious. There's a superconscious, and how we're all connected, in that quantum entanglement, so to speak. So how much of ourselves is tapping into other people's psyches and we don't know it?
Yeah, very true. I mean, there's always been a known truth that everybody can agree to, that a lot of your mood and what you think about and who you are is related to the people that you surround yourself with. And I think, there are varying degrees of influence, based on the person, how much they add, how kind, how generous, how giving they are to the relationship, to the friendship, to the situation, and how toxic people can be, how much they take from us. Mm-hmm. And I think, absolutely.
So Dr. Mike has mentioned global warming. Now, how would global warming affect us? Well, temperature changes Absolutely. If you're accustomed to a certain kind of environment and weather component, and that all changes, that's going to affect the psyche. Where I live, throughout the winter, it's quite cloudy, and a lot of people can't live here because of that cloudiness. Now, we get breaks now and again, but does that affect the psyche? Yes, it does. So would temperature change affect people? Absolutely. Extreme heat, extreme cold. But he also adds an overpopulation, you know, can affect things. And I don't know, I at some level I have to agree with that. Yeah. Wendy's adding in about chemtrails. I have to kind of agree with that. All these factors. So where there was, let's say there's a million people, and we're all dreaming, and we're, you know, quantum physics, let's talk about that, and quantum entanglement. You know, we're all kind of tapping into each other's, you know, psyches. And then suddenly there's 50 million people. Whoa. And now we've got nearly 8 billion people.
Yeah.
And that's bound to happen. So what is it in our superconscious consciousness are we tapping into? And without that knowing. And is this something that can be studied? I don't know. I think that it's out of the realm of science, to be honest.
Well.
Because it's not a repeatable kind of thing. It's just a theory.
Well, so yet, you know, so far, I mean.
Yeah.
That's the thing about science is that it's constantly expanding, and it's a process more than it's a set of dogma. And, you know, I think that there are people who use the scientific method and engage in science that create a dogma in their own mind and try to enforce it. But I don't believe in gatekeeping. And I don't believe that, you know, if one person says this is science and something else isn't, even though there might be a possibility and it's not, I think that there's room for growth. I mean, I'm always respecting the process that it does grow, that people will say that, you know, we thought this, but now we realize it's this. And I think that's going to continue. And, you know, I think that I don't think there's anything that's fundamentally wrong with existence just yet. You know, I think there's a lot of problems. I think we can overcome them. I don't think we're on, you know, any kind of set path to things getting worse and worse, you know, even with a change in climate that, yes, needs to be addressed more, isn't given enough attention, but, you know, we will adapt, we will survive, you know, with the population. I like the fact that in a lot of the developed world and a lot of places where the population's very high, it's stabilizing. I think that we can find solutions to a lot of these problems. And I think dreaming is a big part of that too, because dreaming is so tied to cognitive function, to creativity.
Well, didn't you mention last week that you had a really profound dream, Michael? Do you remember it now?
Oh, I mean, I've had several, but well, last week I talked mostly about my dream that I was on a special, like a contest-winning cruise where I got to hang out with the cast from Star Trek The Next Generation and Avery Brooks as Captain Sisko. But, you know, Captain Sisko, he was always one of my favorites because I grew up with Deep Space Nine as, like, the first Star Trek that I fully remember as a child from start to finish. And, you know, early on, you know, it was always felt like it was me and my dad versus everything in the world, you know, and that's why I really responded to the character of Sisko and his son and the relationship they had. So, it, you know, and that's just a perfect example of why he popped up in a dream, because, you know, these are fundamental things. I grew up watching Star Trek The Next Generation. You know, I was watching that show before I could form permanent memories, and I was watching it with my dad. And so those are always going to be foundational memories for me, and they trickle into my dreams. And I don't remember.
For me, it was Captain Kirk.
But nothing wrong with that.
First ever.
But
Jerry's mentioned in there about dreaming or time traveling, you know, and, you know, that's possible.
Yeah.
It's very possible. I know Wendy said that she had a very unusual dream a couple of days ago, and I'm hoping that she'll write it in the chat. I almost want us to phone her. But, like last night for me, it was a whole bunch of relatives I haven't seen for decades, you know, and we're in this big complex and things started burning. Well, that's cleansing, right? Burning, anything that's burning in a dream is cleansing, renewal. But, you know, here I am kind of a part of this and watching this whole play unfold, and I'm wondering, you know, something's going on with these people. And maybe that's, again, in the super consciousness or the unconscious that I'm tapping into their lives. And I really can't know that. Or is it a past life reference, but the only reference we have in today is putting our clothes on those people when it happened in another time and place? I don't know.
Well, anything is possible. I mean, you keep our minds open to the spectrum of possibility, you know, maintain a little bit of humility in approaching these things, because there's so many possibilities. We don't want to, you know, blind ourselves to a certain reality. Yeah. I've always thought, in the sense of time travel with dreams, in fact, I had this on one of my quick notes for a question, but, you know, it's more than seeing the past. Do we see the future in our dreams? That's always been a thing. You know, there's always been these moments where I know I've seen this. Did I dream this? Did this thing happen before? Of course, it's just that kind of classic deja vu with a little bit extra added into it, but never something that I have a premonition that I think about and can act on. It's just something that, as something's happening, oh yeah, this is super familiar. I think I've done this. Of course, it doesn't help me in any situation, but it's interesting.
Well, indigenous elders have said to me, the more deja vus you have, the closer you are to your true path. And I had to really think about that and explore it further and talk to them. And it's like, if we're aligned with our other selves on many other levels, there's a synchronization of some kind. Mm-hmm. And in this reality, you're exactly where you're supposed to be, linking in with the others. And it's kind of a wild thought. Oh, Dr. Edward, I had a dream of a future event that actually happened just 1 hour after.
Mm.
Wow. Now that's interesting.
Very much so.
So I'm, that's what Magda would call a premonition, you know, something, a foretelling. Dr. Jerry says, yes, we can see the future. It's our future self in that dimension in a parallel universe. That's entirely possible. You know, we have nothing to dispute that. So, you know, I do want to interject something here. I did look up sleep paralysis. And I know, I think it's come up before. And
yeah, you know, my sleep paralysis demon was hoping we were going to talk about this.
Yeah, sleep paralysis, I'm going to read this. I don't know who wrote it. Sleep paralysis occurs when the sleep cycle is shifting between stages. When you wake up suddenly from REM, your brain is awake, but your body is still in REM mode and it can't move, causing you to feel like you're paralyzed. Episodes of sleep paralysis last from a few seconds to 1 or 2 minutes. Now, I found that fascinating when I read that. That's the best description, you know, medical description that I have read. If the body can go into an REM when the brain is not, I mean, that, wow. It's like the brain and the body, but the mind and the body are operating kind of differently. That opens up a whole new world of thinking to me, Michael. You know, it's like, how is it that my brain can be awake, but my body's still in an REM?
Well, we don't have to actually be in REM to dream. We dream in all stages, but we remember most of our dreams, and we dream the most in REM sleep. But I think, yeah, that's just, I think we touched on that last time we had a dream thing. But anyway, it is fascinating, and it is, you know, a potential answer for so many things that people have seen, which I think needs to be considered. You know,
yeah, some people say they're possessed or they're being visited or,
right,
you know, aliens or, you know. Dr. Edwards said, saying when he was very young, he experienced sleep paralysis and out-of-body experiences and other strange phenomena. Now, I have had out-of-body experiences, astral traveling and so on. I've not had what I believe is sleep paralysis, but I can relate that they can be connected in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And You know, it is.
We're reading in the chat, too. So anybody in the archives who happens to be listening and wondering why there's little pauses, there's so much going on in the chat. And we strongly encourage you, if you ever get a chance to join us live, there's lots of activity here. It's very interesting.
So if
we can go back to Wendy's dream, can we, Michael?
Absolutely.
She says, in her dream, she was in a house and said to the person there that it looked familiar. And they said, well, it should. We lived here for 8 years. And I really, at that moment, felt like I was in another dimension. I was aware in my dream that I was not dreaming.
Interesting.
So it was unusual for the types of dreams she has. And that's really interesting, where you're in a dream, or you're in a dream, but you're not dreaming. Like the altered state. She has also added here that she does practice astral traveling, but she hasn't learned to control it yet. So it's just a discipline after a while. So you'll get the handle on it there, Wendy.
Yeah.
See, this is the kind of dialogue that goes in our chat room. I love it.
I think I've talked before about my theory. I don't know if it's original. I don't know if I read it somewhere or thought of it. But it's the idea that fiction in our lives isn't just an entertainment form, you know, books, movies, whatever. It's a way to prepare us for possible circumstances, right? Or to kind of help shape our mind. You know, sci-fi became all the more popular as our technology began to advance more and more. It prepared us for things that would become possible. It prepared us to think and accept realities that were unknown to prior generations. And I think that fiction, that a lot of that aspect of our culture comes from that creative side of us. And I think dreams are very intricately linked with creativity. It is that there's a lot of different theories about why we dream. You know, there's the kind of materialist computer theory, where it's just a way to process information. And we know that it has things to do with memory consolidation. I'm reading off a list right now. Emotional regulation, problem solving, brain waste removal. Different things come into play. Like one of these items right here, future states. Dreams may help the brain predict its own future states to help us prepare for these situations. There's all kinds of different things that come into it. And with a complex mind that humans have, our dreams are going to vary, and they're going to be, very interesting. There's been times where I had, there are times where I dream a lot. And sometimes these dreams are very entertaining. It's like I'm on an adventure. I'm like going through this thing, and some of the details are lost when I wake up. You know, it fades like they so often do, but they're almost always entertaining.
Dr. Mike has asked, what happens if you die in a dream? That's happened to me.
Yeah, me
actually,
too.
A couple of times. And in my world, I think it's a tie-in to a past life. That's mine, or an alternate dimension, if you will.
Perhaps.
But Michael, as you just stated, that could be a way of the brain preparing. I don't know. Falling out of a building when I died. And I've had that dream where it's flat. a few times where any time, though, I've had that kind of a dream, I do wake up.
Mm. Yeah.
It's an instant kind of shock in this reality to wake up and say, oh my God, I just died. And by the way, people, I spell God G-A-W-D. So just for the record.
nice to throw out there.
But,
I died twice in my dreams that I can remember easily. And once I had my head cut off, or, at least, oh God, I was very weird. It was like when I was a teenager. I vividly remember looking up at my bedroom ceiling. Then my brother enters frame, and then he swings down with a samurai sword. And then I can't breathe, and I'm realizing, oh my God, I'm dying, I'm dying. And then I wake up. That one stuck with me for a long time.
Hmm.
The other...
I interpret that, my instinct is to interpret that as a past life memory.
Hmm, interesting. And
go ahead.
The other one also involves something with the neck, the throat. It was when kind of myself as a younger, you know, 12, 13-year-old, and I, with a couple of friends, and I ran this run-down building, and we had a gun. I don't know why. I mean, we were playing with it, and round fired off, bounced all over, and then hit me in the neck. And so I was going to be wondering, like, Jesus, I need to make, what's going on with that? But so many different possibilities. You know, one time I told those stories to somebody, and they said something about potential disease or something like that originating in the neck that your mind's trying to warn you of. It's been a good decade or two since, and nothing yet, knock on wood.
Mm.
But
there's a lot of talk in the chat about astral traveling, so I think that's a good topic for next week, Michael.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're going to talk about astral projection, astral traveling, so folks, stay tuned. I think that's worthy of a conversation. I don't think we've fully addressed that topic in a long time, so if we ever have. So we're going to do that.
Absolutely.
And, so it's, you know, again, there's a little debate going on about whether you feel like you literally died in a sleep or, you know, it's something else. So I think that it's really subjective. And anybody who's about to interpret a dream, the question is always first, how did you feel? So it's not just the experience or were you in it? Were you watching it? It's a matter of how did you feel? Were you afraid? Were you welcoming it? Were you enjoying it? Were you just an observer? It's like the feelings that you had, because the feel and the emotions of it is just as important as the dream itself.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad you said that, because I wouldn't have thought of it. But one of the very true things is more than the imagery you see a lot of times, well, that's important, is the emotion that you feel, just like you said. Yeah. I'm so happy you touched on that.
Yeah, it's and that's the first thing Magda would always ask people. How did you feel? Were you scared? You know, or, you know, it's just, what is your first emotion? And she would not try to plant seeds like, are you scared? That would come after. You'd say, well, I don't know how I felt. Well, you were there. How do you feel? And so then she would kind of say, okay, were you? And name all these emotions. And I really took heed of that, because it was a very wise thing on her part, that the emotional experience of dreams. And even when you're doing hypnotic regressions, it's you're observing it, you're not experiencing it. That's a really critical thing. And when you're observing it, how do you feel? And so it's, you know, it's making those really subtle distinctions in trying to understand dreams. Now, I'm going to recommend to people that if you're going to go online or into books about dream interpretation, I want you to be really careful. And the caution is that, let's say you dream about birds. Well, what kind of birds are they? Are they blackbirds, bluebirds, all kinds of birds? So you can't just go online and say, oh, I dreamed about birds. What does that mean? You have to be really specific about that. And even then, 10 different writers are going to have 10 different interpretations.
Yeah, absolutely.
So look for the common thread. What is the thread that links them all together, not just? So, you know, don't take it at face value. And the same with trying to understand your dreams. I dreamed of this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, three things pop up in Google, because that's where we all go now. Don't take that as face value. Dig a little deeper if you must. If it's one of those dreams that sticks with you, very often dreams will fade as the day goes on. Mm-hmm. Even if you remembered it in the morning. I like to emerge in the morning. I don't like to wake up and go to work. It's painful. I like to Oh, emerge slowly out of one consciousness into another. What did I just dream about? Where was I? What was I doing? What was going on? Where am I now? That's my whole scenario in the morning. And then I have this segue of time to say, oh, and how do I feel? And very rarely, but it will happen, that I'm really distressed. Like, where, you know, and of course I have some profanities going on in my head. So what the was that? And then I have to kind of get in the here now, remind myself, okay, here I am, you know, when the day it is, and, you know, ground myself into the here now. But it's always about that feel. So just remember, folks, what it means to one person isn't going to mean the same to the next. So.
Very true. I think that's such a truth when it comes to life and existence in general. You know, one person's truth might not apply to somebody else. What works for you might not work for somebody else. That's why
I think that I go back to more indigenous interpretations that have been passed down orally that seem to hold truer or hold fast throughout many generations, not just what somebody invented this week, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true, you know. And there's so much complexity to the world. I always say embrace nuance, embrace complexity, understand that we only get the opportunity to, you know, see existence from a little sliver of perspective that is ours.
That's true.
Unless, like, there are people like you, Dr. Vicky, they've had multiple past lives that they can recall, in which case you get a few perspectives.
But, yeah, well, you know, it could all be in my imagination. And you know what, Michael, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, true enough.
Even if it is. So
true enough.
I'm content with that. I've had a dry spell of writing for about 5 years, and I'm writing on two novels simultaneously. And so this one I'm going to tell everybody before. We have a lot of names in the chat for cards here coming up, so we're going to get to that right away. I have found in the last 6 months especially, if I lay down for a nap in the daytime, I can't sleep. I can't sleep. There's voices in my head. Stuff is happening. I'm telling stories, and it's like it won't leave me alone. And finally it occurred to me, oh, you know, I have to write. And so I started writing. And as soon as I started the writing, that experience stopped. So I found that fascinating for myself that, that's what's going on.
Mm.
You know, it's... So in the dream state, any number of things can happen, including as a semi-dream state, semi-conscious state, that there's something happening on another level. So again, as soon as I started writing, everything started calming down. I can actually lay down, just kind of meditate, and again, I don't sleep, but it's just a more relaxed state. And I only need 10 minutes. That's all it is. Just kind of chill out 10 minutes. And that's that. But at night, it's a glass of brandy.
So. You know, I used to, and I still have a love-hate relationship with sleep. Used to hate it outright. Didn't have any love aspect of it. You know, partially because when I was young and dealing with some stuff in life, I would get these panic attacks as I was trying to fall asleep and as all the thoughts were swirling. And so I grew to hate that time of the day, you know, getting ready for sleep. And I used to put it off and put it off. I'd stay up all night sometimes. But there's a big part of me, it's like fast forwarding. You're losing consciousness. You're losing time. It's just like, you know, going nowhere. I've learned to appreciate it more, and I used to hate naps. Hate the concept of naps. But now, you know, I don't nap all that often, but I do, especially if I had a late night the prior night. And I got to say, there's nothing like a dog nap, by which I mean laying on the couch, surrounded by dogs, preferably one or two laying on you, and just enjoying that moment. Nothing like it.
Well, you know, again, this is a conversation. Time goes by so fast when we're talking, Michael. You know, 35 minutes and here we are. So... let's get on to some cards, shall we? And for those in the archives, Michael is going to pull an inner oracle self-discovery card. designed by Dr. Kelly, and I pull a support tarot card, and we kind of see what story there is to tell.
Absolutely.
I think we have Dr. Jerry first.
We do. And tonight for you, Dr. Jerry, by the way, she said that she's going to be getting out of her physical therapy very soon, so we're very happy to hear that.
Yes.
And tonight, I have for you number 37, groundedness. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all of the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found.
Well, I got the Four of Spades, which is so interesting to me, Jerry. I know you're going through a health thing right now. Four of Spades is always about rest, constraint, taking a little time out. And so that groundedness and the Four of Spades, I'm going to say make sure you rest. Make sure you get enough rest. And maybe it's even after a treatment or, you know, your physical therapy, make sure that you rest, that you don't say, oh, I feel good and go for it. It's the body needs to adjust. And something I've learned is very often I think I know what my body is saying. I don't have a clue. You know, it's like, oh, I think I feel good today. And I get on the scale and gain 4 pounds. I say, when did that happen? You know, it's like the brain and the body, what we think we know in the body can be quite disconnected at times and we don't know that. So I'm just encouraging you through a healing process to make sure that you listen to the body and rest when it needs to. That's the message for you.
Very nice. All right.
Okay. We have Jeff next.
All right. And for you, I have number 26. Let's see. Number 26, energy signature. This card is a call to be aware of energy signatures, which is the vibe a person puts out or the energy of a situation. Energy signatures are changed by increased awareness resulting from gaining more knowledge and wisdom of self. Excuse me. Review the present energy signature that you may be sending or that of a situation, individual, or relationship. Keep what is healthy, remove what is unhealthy. Remember, you cannot change others, you can only change yourself and your own energy signature.
Well, I got the King of Clubs for you, Jeff, so there is a shift happening. You know, the King of Clubs is a good communicator. He's an overseer. He likes to communicate. So what I think is happening is you're finding your words. You're finding your articulation. And, you know, very slowly it's like, oh, did I just say that? I didn't know I could say that. You know, sometimes I have to write down the one-liners that come out of my mouth. I said, wow, that was good. But that's what I mean. Your energy is shifting. So you're in a growth spurt. And I say that psychological, spiritual growth spurt. So I say, stay on this road and kind of get to know yourself again as you're shifting and changing. I think it's exciting.
Very good, good. All right. And I think, I'm just going through the list. It went very quickly, but I think we have Audra next.
Yeah.
Perfect. And for you tonight, I have number 34, take and release ownership. Ownership and entitlement are not the same. Ownership is taking responsibility with a healthy attitude. Entitlement is expecting more than what is earned. Further, codependence is taking an unhealthy ownership for other people's problems and feelings. This may be a time to reflect on owning only what is yours and releasing the rest.
Well, the Four of Spades is usually about possessions and, you know, being either miserly or not. Like, it's everything has a duality. And I think in this case, it could be a message, Audra, about knowing what you're responsible for and what you're not, and more in a financial way. Are you responsible for those? Do you have to help? Can you help? What? And I'm going back to Dr. Kelly's thing, you know, about you know, doing for yourself what you can and letting other people do for themselves. It doesn't mean we don't help each other, but maybe making, using some discretion here and kind of reassessing, you know, that taking and releasing of ownership, what's no longer yours to own, and making some of those adjustments. That's what I think there.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. We have our card keeper herself up next. And thank you very much, Wendy. For those of you that didn't know, our card keeper is Wendy. And we're doing New Year, so a lot of new cards for people. And tonight for you, I have number 25, Power of Belief. Belief is the most powerful force in the universe. One's beliefs are responsible for one's successes and failures. It's also important to realize that you cannot disbelieve in one thing without also believing in something else. Beliefs can help or hinder, enable or disable. Denial is a belief and means lying to oneself to evade responsibility. Ponder your beliefs to see if they are healthy or unhealthy, and proceed with conviction.
Well, I pulled two cards because the first one kind of confused me, Wendy. It was a King of Diamonds. So then I pulled the Two of Clubs. So that power of belief. Sometimes we hope, want, or expect some people to assist us, and maybe they can't. Like you're looking at the future and you say, well, the future looks like this, but they can't help. They don't want to help. Like, what is that? Who are your supporting elements in your life to help you through a shift? You know, and what is it you believe versus what's the reality? And I'm not meaning to be unkind in this way, but when you look at the people of your life, who are there for you? And who's not there for you? And as you see the future, who do you want those really good people to be in your life? So, and I'm not saying that people aren't giving, but if you're going through a time, then how much are they giving and, you know, carte blanche able to help? And so I think it's just a moment of looking at kind of what you believe in and what you don't, and making some adjustments according to the realities of the people you have in your life. So, I think we've all had to do that at times. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, very well said.
I'd like to pause for a moment, Michael, before we go on. And I want to address Jerry's comment. And, you know, when she got groundedness in that four spades, she said both are perfect. And yes, she finds herself thinking, taking an afternoon nap, and it's just the perfect amount of time to give her the energy to get through the rest of the day. Grounded is perfect as I approach the next event, which is a mastectomy on March 11th, everybody, and fight for myself in aftercare without chemo. So everybody, at this moment, I would like you all to just direct some energy toward Dr. Jerry Conklin and send her your heart and lots of healing energy. And you got this, Jerry, but it really does. You've got to take care of yourself. And I know you're going to get through this. I know it in my bones. And it's just, oh, you know, the challenge of the day. Is it scary? Absolutely. Do you have the strength and the power to do this? Absolutely. So when you think about it, it's not the outcome. It's the journey that you're going through. The outcome, I feel here, is assured. So I just wanted to interrupt this, you know, what we're talking about to say that. And, you know, I think many of us here have done a dance with cancer. I haven't had breast cancer as you have, Jerry, but I'm certain there's a couple of others in this chat and listening in the archives that have. Mm-hmm. And you're in the best care ever, and you know what to do for yourself as a matter of energy and otherwise, so you got this.
Very well said, and glad you made that shout out, and it's hard to say anything other than I concur. You do have this, and I think you know you have it. You said as much in chat, and I think that going in with that kind of confidence, and, you know, our thoughts are, our good energy is going to be with you.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see you here for many years to come. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you didn't need those boobs anyway. You don't can't have an emotional attachment to some of your body parts. You just have to see the light of the day for it. So, you know, when I had a hysterectomy many years ago, there's a moment for a woman. I know it's not going to make sense to a man, but there's a moment for a woman where your choices feel like they're taken away from you. Like, oh, I can't decide if I want another child. It's going to be taken away from me. But, you know, cancer's cancer. So, and it's just not being emotionally attached to your organs anymore and saying, well, that sucker's got to come out. and if you can see, and I know this sounds, because it's so hard to go through this, and I mean this with all the kindness in my heart, it's see some of the humor.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighterness, the lighter side of it. I know when I was going to the Cancer Institute a few times, again, many years ago, I thought, oh, how macabre everyone was and depressing. And I'm trying to make light, and nobody's getting the humor at all. And I thought, wow, it's so heavy.
Mm.
We need to lighten that energy. And,
yeah.
You know, and here's Amanda. She had a hysterectomy at age 32 as well. She's saying, thanks for that, Amanda. So, I mean, there's, you know, we deal with it. We don't realize that we can die from a flu, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is just a big, serious word.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I'm glad you put it in perspective. But.
So, well, let's move on, Michael.
All right.
I think we have Amanda next.
We do. And Amanda, for you, I have number 5, Law of Control. Differences are inevitable. Diversity is desirable. The Law of Control says that you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave. Oh, Dr. Hunter, I think you might be on mute there.
Oh, thanks, Michael. I am.
I always get happy when I get to point it out, since I get caught sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Well, my turn. Okay, Amanda, you got the High Priestess. Law of Control, High Priestess, that's powerful. The High Priestess gives you an intuition, an insight, an ability to look at others and see things, but you can't control it. And then even for yourself, use your intuition to navigate your life. It's not about controlling, it's about navigating. Because remember, we're not in this by ourselves. There's always these other energies. So if you have, let's say, a foretelling of something for yourself in your life, you can't control that, but you can navigate through it. So it's about kind of...
Did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
I lost you for a second there. I couldn't hear anything after you said it's kind of a...
Oh, geez, I heard the beeping, but I don't know what happened. It must have been a Skype thing. So are you there?
I can hear you. I think we're good now.
Okay. So it's really about navigating. You can't control how you're going to get there or even little things you see for yourself. If you have a bad feeling about going out, then don't go out. But if you know something that's coming up, just know that you can't control other people. You can only control how you manage through the situation. So that's a really good message for you, Amanda.
All right. Well said.
Okay.
All right. I think we have Dr. Edward next.
We do.
And for you, I have wild card number 8, freedom. Let's see. Wild card number 8, freedom. Freedom is a state of being. It is an unencumbered mind that can remain open and move forward. Freedom is the ability to recreate the self, shedding old ideas that no longer serve any purpose for present and future evolution. Freedom is the knowing of what and who one is as a free and sovereign being of the universe. Freedom means being, one's excuse me, I can't speak. Freedom means one can be or do anything one wants within the limits of do no harm and do right.
Okay, so I've got the Empress in support of that. Now, what I'm really inclined to say to you, Edward, because the Empress is all about growth, planting seeds. It's about growing, growth. That's kind of the essence of the Empress. Freedom, it's just not caring what other people think anymore. And it's like you reach an age where, oh, that's not important to me anymore. Oh, I've been there, done that. And so I feel like you're actually maybe going through a bit of a shift here of freeing yourself of, you know, feeling that weight of other people's ideas, even what you had as ideas. It's like saying, I don't believe that anymore, and feeling freer because of it. And that gives you this enormous capacity to continue to grow and realize, you know, that all that's just not important anymore. So there's a segue here of feeling freer of, you know, your own mind or your own beliefs in the world. And I think for the grace of age, that happens. You know, all of us getting a little bit older, we know that that stuff doesn't matter anymore. I do have to be reminded, though, when I look at teenagers, when I look at younger people, I have to remember in my mind what's important at that age.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not important anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and, you know, here's the thing. Some of the stuff that was important to us at that age was never important to begin with. It's just our limited perspective.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff is important because you're that age, because you need to go through certain things to develop, to expand. But
it's not that, then, Michael, it's what do I do to keep this relationship okay? And we're always compromising or bending or something. And one day say, oh, I don't want to do that anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to put the toilet paper on the way I want to because that's the way I felt like it.
Absolutely. And the way that you wanted to and the way that everybody should want to is overhanging. But
yeah, okay. Unless you have cats. Now, I've tried to tell people this. If you have cats to mess around with the toilet paper, you want it going under.
Well,
trust
me. I guess that you don't believe in goodness and, you know, humanity, but it's whatever. We can just agree to disagree on that, that I'm, you know, obviously right, and you're just wanting to be wrong to placate the cats. It's fine. I kid, but I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway.
So I think the last card of the night here, if I have this right, is Ronaldo.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Chat's been moving fast, and that's the last name I had as well. And so for you, Ronaldo, I have number 4, past, present, and future. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are, 1, you are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor.
You know, the 8 of Hearts is, to me, very often a reflection of walking in the dark. And it's finding that place in your heart, if you will, of being able to see from your heart. So imagine you're kind of walking along, but you only have the moon to guide you. So the past, present, and future, it might be that your perspectives have changed. And so you're kind of getting this new perception of things, and maybe you can't justify it today. Maybe there's no logical, sensible explanation until you feel it and know that it's the right thing. So a knowing and a thinking is kind of different, right? Thinking, sometimes we're in the, always, a friend of mine would say, in the church of justification, but it's the feeling and knowing something, and then we can sort it out intellectually. So the past, present, future might be that, you know, reconciling some things in your life. How do you want to move forward? And again, that how do you feel intuitively and what you want to do? So there's a lot of intuition in there, Ronaldo, so pay attention to that. So Wendy just said Dr. Mike isn't getting a card. Did we miss him?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for too.
You just wrote that. I didn't see.
She's asking.
So.
She's just asking. So.
Okay, Dr. Mike doesn't want a card today.
Doesn't
want
to know his future. All right, I guess.
All right.
Every time you hear that noise, it's because I bumped my mic stand.
Oh. But, there you go. I'm just so surprised all your dogs are quiet.
Don't say anything.
And for the record,
you.
Everybody, Michael has four dogs in his own, just took in another shelter, like a temporary foster dog. So he's got five of them, four cats, and everybody's quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, I have two fish, too, and the good thing is they never make noise, so, you know, thank God. But,
I had no idea you had fish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Varying amounts, so, depending on, you know, they don't live a few years, but.
So when you say to me you don't know things about me, I did not know you had fish.
Okay. Yeah. Have for years.
And the cats have not eaten the fish?
Well, they don't really have the opportunity. Yes. Although the cats love to lay it on the fish tank. I have, mats laid out for them to sleep on top of the fish tank on top of the aquarium. It's a big old 70-gallon one. But
Wendy says, how about some pigs, Dr. Michael? I have a couple.
No pigs. No. And actually, I do feel a lot for pigs. In fact, I stopped eating pork products, not because I don't consider them unclean animals, but because I don't agree with the factory farming practice. It breaks my heart to think about it, but I digress. No pigs now. No, I don't know that I have the room.
No, you don't have the room. That's funny.
It's tough, though, you know, being on, you know, plugged into different rescue networks and Facebook groups and things like that. Yeah. It is real tough seeing, you know, animals that are in desperate situations and, you know.
I know.
And,
but we can't save them all, Michael.
No, I try to, you know, spread the word, or I try to get him hooked into the rescue, but, you know, anyway,
next week, reminding everybody, we're going to talk about astral projection, astral traveling. That'll be a topic, so everybody join in.
Yeah.
If you have any of your own experiences, please, you know, email us or be in the chat room and write it down, because we'll be sure to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I've enjoyed tonight, Michael. Thank you very much.
Well, we have, and thank you. I've appreciated having this discussion with you. I appreciate people sharing. You know, Dr. Edward had a good mention in there earlier, but I don't think we got to it. And I cannot find it in the chat here real quick, but regardless, I appreciate everybody and their contributions. Thank you so much for joining us. Great discussion. We barely scratched the surface on what we can talk about, even in the time that we had. Next week, great kind of segue from tonight, astral projection. Can't wait for it. And hope you all join us then, too. And as we sign off, Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts?
No, Dr. Jeff said it pretty good. Good night. Happy dreaming.
Well said. Well said. Well, with that, we'll look forward to seeing you next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.